While we're waiting, I'll start introducing myself again. My name is Mike Wilker. I'm a pastor in the ELCA, and I'm the director of the Lutheran Volunteer Corps. LVC, like some of you have heard about already, is a is a one-year service program where folks work for social justice full-time in social ministry organizations or nonprofit organizations around the country. Anywhere from being a medical assistant in a clinic to legal aid worker to helping to run an after-school program in a congregation to working with homeless people in a day program or an afternoon or evening shelter. And they could also, in those kind of programs, they might be the volunteer coordinator as well, get folks that aren't homeless to come on in and volunteer their time as well in the shelter too. So a variety of different jobs and opportunities in direct service as well as community organizing and advocacy. Like we have volunteers that work at Lutheran World Relief and Lutheran Immigration Refugee Services as well on advocacy issues. So that's the work that they do. They also live together in intentional communities of 4 to 7 people. And so they share their joys and struggles with one another about their work as well as other things going on in their life. And then they encourage one another to simple, sustainable living. More and more as you come along.
The circle will get wider.
Yeah.
That's all right. We're waiting for some other people all the time, too.
Okay. All right, can we?
Three
other
people.
Okay.
We could do the whole fishbowl thing.
We're all good. It's participatory tonight.
No.
Or you don't want to say.
Okay, I have three other people that are coming besides us.
Okay.
So, since
we'll
we got people still coming in, we're going to. What we'll do tonight, give you an overview, is that we're going to look at, think a little bit about Dietrich Bonhoeffer and look a little bit at his biography, his life, and some strategies for resisting evil that a friend of mine, Lisa Dayhill, who's also a professor at Trinity Seminary, discerned when she looked at his life. She is one of the nation's Dietrich Bonhoeffer scholars right now. An excellent person and great scholar. And she wrote this little paper where she pulled out 10 of these strategies that she sees that Bonhoeffer used to resist evil. So I'm going to give you a brief overview of that. It's not my work. I'm just going to try to convey a little bit of Lisa's work for you all tonight. And then about half of our time together is going to be a time for you all in groups of 6 or so to share with one another a conversation a bit about what resonates with you or in your hearts in these strategies and what perhaps God might be calling to you or saying to you when you hear about Dietrich Bonhoeffer's life and his resistance against evil. Okay? So that's where we're going tonight. Welcome. First of all, I'm teaching this whole week on fool's work. Yesterday I talked about loving God and loving neighbors as being kind of foolish to do in the rest of the world. Doesn't see that as being something that we would give our time or energy to. And tonight we're going to look at another foolish work, and that is to resist evil. A lot of these strategies, when you could look at it from a different perspective, is not what is the smart or wise thing to do. But as the theme verse for Holding Village this summer says, but God uses the things that are foolish to put to shame those who are strong and mighty and powerful. And that the cross itself, the cross of Jesus Christ, is foolish from our eyes. But it's the wisdom of God for our salvation. So, with that, a little bit about Dietrich Bonhoeffer to remind everyone here. Dietrich Bonhoeffer was a man, a German, lived during predominantly what we know about during the 1930s and 40s in Germany. And so he was living in the time of Nazi Germany. He was also became a Lutheran pastor as an adult. And he eventually became part of the resistance against the Nazi regime and eventually also participated in a plot or a conspiracy to assassinate Hitler himself. He was a musician and a theologian and an organizer, an administrator, had a lot of gifts that he brought to bear in trying to resist the institutional evil that he saw in his nation at the time. It's an important point to recognize is that there's different forms of evil, and what Lisa Dahill is focusing on here is how Bonhoeffer resisted institutional evil, political evil, state evil. And she finds that in our world today, so much of evil is perpetrated on those institutional and systemic ways, and that we as individuals can often feel, first of all, at the mercy of that systemic evil and that institutional oppression, that we can also feel isolated, alone, and depressed when we look at the face of evil at that massive of a scale. But she finds in Bonhoeffer some hopeful strategies, and she offers them to us as a way to give us inspiration and hope. So here are, in brief form, the 10 strategies that she sees. First of all, and she says that these are in, she puts them in kind of a chronological order, more or less. Bonhoeffer didn't become a Christian until an adult in his life. So that's why trust in Jesus is number 3. These are also not necessarily in any priority order, okay? But the first one that Lisa pulls out is Bonhoeffer's use of the gifts of privilege. He was a man in a sexist society. He was born into an upper income family, and he had a number of comforts. His family loved him and the rest of his family members deeply. He felt cared for. He had a large house with much space. He even had servants in his family to care for his family and everything that they needed. They had lots of books and good education available to them for Bonhoeffer to go to university, as well as for other family members to go to university. They went on vacations, retreats, places like this. Bonhoeffer recognized those gifts of privilege, and he used them, not for so much his own benefits, but he put them to the use of other people. Later on in his life, he uses his family's political connections in order to take some actions to save Jews. He takes the benefits of his good education and his status in the church as an opportunity to preach and to get the word out about things that he thinks are very important. So he uses the gifts of privilege and puts them at the service of his neighbor and at the service of God. This might be, for those of us here at Holden Village, and perhaps in North America, one of the most radical things that Bonhoeffer might speak to us today. If you think about the gifts of privilege that you have, how are you using those at the service of the people who need them most and at the service of God? The second strategy of resistance that Dahill finds in Bonhoeffer is his intellectual analysis. He is an academician, and he uses the tools of cultural, political, and economic analysis, social critique, and he delves into those very well. He's a very good scholar, but he's not irrelevant. He's the antithesis of that ivory tower academician. He uses these intellectual tools and analysis in order to look at the concrete issues that are facing his community and his church. So, and it's intellectual analysis and papers and presentations that also invite a response on the people's part. It's not just analysis that's to be put on a shelf and left on the library somewhere, but he always seems to be writing in order to garner a response, to call people to action. Third, Daniel finds in Bonhoeffer the strategy to resist evil by trusting in Jesus. That Bonhoeffer finds that prayer, being rooted in the reality, with the capital R, of God, by reading the Bible and meditating upon the scriptures, by attending worship in a community and faithfully, and by confessing, by honestly thinking about, meditating upon his own sin and sinfulness, and then confessing that and receiving God's forgiveness, that all of that is a life of trust in Jesus. Dahill says about him that Bonhoeffer believed that prayer is necessary, and without prayer, resistance really is futile. That if we don't have prayer when facing evil, we won't be able to resist it ultimately.
Mike?
Yes?
That third one, trust in Jesus, makes me want to know more about, because I really didn't know he became Christian as a sort of conscious later teen or adult, early adult.
Mm-hmm.
So, do you know any more about that? Like, when, where, and how, and why
he came to
trust in Jesus?
No, that was a new thing for me, too. I always thought that he was, like...
His dad was a doctor, I think.
Yeah.
But I never really heard sort of his childhood faith story, and that's fascinating.
Yeah.
Did that come up? He studied, or he served in New York in an inner city church and was deeply influenced by African American worship.
Right.
I'm wondering if that was part of it.
He was already a professor of theology at that time, though. So.
Once he encountered the Spirit that was resident in that congregation,
yeah,
he could not remain in the U.S. He had to go home.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if that was where he really, I don't know what he needed.
Yeah, we'll get to that. I think that you also see in his life, too, that his trust grows, deepens, also is questioned at times. Like many of us, we can have times when we feel that we're standing on the solid rock of Jesus, and at other times, he also had those times of, when, where is God in my life? But he always went to prayer. He seemed to have a very devotional prayer life. I'm going to move on, so I get all 10 of them up there. Fourth is the strategy of using his public church leadership. He used his roles in the church as a way to resist evil. When Hitler first came to power, by that time, he was already a fairly well-known pastor and theologian and academician, and so he went on the airwaves the next day in order to preach and teach and speak out against Hitler's taking power. He wouldn't have been able to do that if he hadn't also have used his gifts of privilege, if he didn't have the intellectual analysis and preparation to make him ready to be able to speak out and use his leadership. But he did use his leadership. His roles in the institution mattered to him, and they mattered in how he resisted evil. He also, as a church leader, urged the church itself, as a community, to take an active corporate role in resisting evil. He called for the church to engage in civil disobedience. Even in 1933, he asked that the church would become a spoke in the wheel of the state-sponsored oppression that was going on. Fifth strategy that Lisa sees in Bonhoeffer was his withdrawal to regroup, his ability and often times retreating, in order to rethink, to reflect, and to re-engage afterwards. His trip to Harlem was one of those times when he was retreating, in a sense, from the real oppressive nature of Nazi Germany at that time. It was 1935, and he went to Harlem, and there he learned about African-American theology, spirituality, and music, and black liberation theology, which was being developed and proclaimed by one of the pastors in Harlem at Abyssinian Baptist Church. And that kind of distance from Germany and an immersion into another place gave him an opportunity to rethink about what was happening back in his own country. And that was such a powerful experience that he returned. He could have stayed in the United States, but he returned, fed, nourished, inspired once again. And he also went on retreats too. He had a friend who had a really nice estate, would oftentimes go out to the estate and hang out there. Could have been feeling like it was the good, abundant life that he was living out there in the, on the retreat of his friend's big estate. But that was something that he purposefully did. And when he was there, he was reflecting on what was happening back and when he would re-enter society and the resistance. Sixth, he reclaimed monasticism in a certain way. He helped found and call together a kind of a seminary called Finkenwald, and he called people to live together and then wrote a book about this called Life Together. And he was experimenting there, and it was a helpful strategy for resistance with reclaiming an ordered rhythm for prayer, study, sharing meals together, and playing together. He saw that these rhythms of living together under the household of God was a way in order to strengthen one another and also to have a developed relationship with other human beings in which you could talk honestly about your own failings, sin, and struggles. So personal confession was very important for Bonhoeffer in this life together. He talked about that if we don't know sin's effects on our own selves, and we can't talk honestly about that in deep relationship, which he found and encouraged people to find in this kind of life together, then we can't really understand or face the contours of evil in the rest of the world, especially that institutional state of oppression like that. So reclaiming that monastic life centered on prayer, study, meals together, and confession of sins with one another. Seventh was the strategy was to take action to rescue the Jews. And he was involved in some attempts and some successful attempts to help Jews escape the Nazi oppression. He wasn't one of the main leaders in getting people out of Germany, but what he saw there was that, like when he was in Harlem, that if you are in solidarity and taking action in solidarity with the people most oppressed in the situation, that you can see you can have a perspective on the evil from the underside. That this solidarity was saving real human embodied lives, and it was also opening Bonhoeffer up to the real lived experiences and the oppression that the people were facing. So it was no longer abstract, but this became an embodied experience that affected how Bonhoeffer saw and resisted evil in other ways. Some of you might hear this phrase, the church for others, being a person for others, being the church for others. And here in this concrete action is a way that Bonhoeffer was being a person for others, putting himself at the service of others. The eighth, and perhaps very controversial strategy that Bonhoeffer employed was to be part of a conspiracy to overthrow the Nazi government and to assassinate Hitler. I'm going to read from Lisa's article here. As a Lutheran, Bonhoeffer knows we're never pure anyway. Maintaining our personal innocence is not the point of Christian discernment, but effective and responsible action within history is the point of discernment. Martin Luther, many centuries before, talked about sin boldly. And Bonhoeffer recognized that there were a couple of, or more than a couple of choices that he could make in response to the state-sponsored evil that was being perpetrated in his nation. And that all of them were sinful in some way. He could have been a quietist and not done anything in the face of evil in his homeland. And he could have done some other actions too. But in discernment, through prayer, Bible study, worship, and confession, he discerned that participating in the conspiracy to overthrow the government and to assassinate the leader was what God was calling him to do at that time. It was a way to be obedient. Yet, even though it was a way to be obedient to God, Bonhoeffer also clearly recognized that this was also sinning against God and other human beings. It was not pure. That's what Lisa and Bonhoeffer were understanding. That this isn't a pure action. It's a muddy action. But it's one that is combining both obedience to God as well as a recognition of the sinfulness of that action. Ninth, the strategy in which I found surprising that this would be a strategy to resist state-sponsored and institutional evil, but it's very hopeful to me, is that Bonhoeffer spent time and cherished his relationships with his family and friends. You could be sucked up in a movement, become an activist all your life, and yet Bonhoeffer really took time to be with his family and friends and to strengthen those bonds of friendship through music. He was a musician, like I said earlier, and he loved to play music with his family members and friends. He wrote letters, maintained his correspondence, told his family members that he cherished them and loved them, and they shared that kind of love in response. He was deeply grateful for his friends and for his family members, and so grateful that he started to think that maybe gratitude and the things that we're grateful for and how we're grateful to God for these things is really a source of resisting evil. So the gratitude for family and friends, and to cherish that as a way to resist evil. Finally, martyrdom is the ultimate strategy, the ultimate viewing and being in solidarity with people who are below the oppression. And yet, for Bonhoeffer, he was led to martyrdom. He was finally imprisoned because the plot was discovered, and he was then hung on April 9th, 1945. And he didn't seek to be killed. He sought to follow Jesus Christ and to follow where Jesus was calling him to walk and to be with Jesus wherever he was. And Bonhoeffer was clear that Jesus was with those who were oppressed and was in his homeland trying to resist evil and was in solidarity with his people and with his nation. So to follow Jesus and to be wherever he leads for the sake simply of being with Jesus is what led Bonhoeffer to martyrdom and to death. These strategies Lisa has teased out from a very complex life. And there's connections that you can make to all of them. So there can be distinctions among these, not necessarily separations. And so those are 10 strategies for resisting evil that we can find in the life of Dietrich Bonhoeffer. If I've got a couple of the actual copies of Lisa's paper, so you can take it with you after tonight's session. But it's also online at elca.org, the Journal of Lutheran Ethics, so JLE. So if you don't take a copy tonight, don't want to carry something down the hill, you can look it up online afterwards. Well, now what I'd like to do is to invite you in just a moment. I'm going to get you into groups of six or so. Maybe five would be good, but try not to go over six. And we're going to have a conversation so that you can respond to some of these strategies with one another. And I'm going to give you the instructions first, and then I'll repeat them when you're in your groups. We're going to use a process of mutual invitation when you're in the groups of six, and that is that each of you will have a chance to respond to the question or to pass for now and let someone else go, and then at the end, as everyone else has shared, then they'll come back to you, or to pass, simply to not respond to that question. But we're going to go around three times. And the first time, I hope you don't pass at this point. Say your name to one another. And since you don't know your names yet, try to ask one another. So we'll practice here. My name's Mike. I'm from Washington, D.C. What's your name? Would you like to introduce yourself?
I'm Gail Kepler. I'm from Chicago area.
And so then Gail would then ask someone else to introduce themselves. So you can point or gesture to the person, but try to invite them verbally to speak. Sometimes we've done this, and we're just like, okay, you next. So be gracious right from the get-go. So inviting one another to share your names.
I'm not going to say it.
Then, when the second time round, I'm going to invite you to just simply share which of these strategies is resonating with you right now. As you briefly heard about them, which of these strategies is resonating with you? And so you might just choose one of these 10 and just say it. That's why I put them up here, to remind you after we've gone through all 10. And you might say, the one that's resonating with me is trust in Jesus. Just simply say that, and then invite another person to share what's resonating within them tonight. Then the third time round, and this is the biggest one, that's why I put the star on it. These two will go around fairly quickly. But if you can, in 1 or 2 minutes, we're just going to help you all have a chance to share. Answer some question like this. What is causing this strategy to resonate within you right now? What do you think is causing that strategy to kind of make your heart pump a little bit faster? What might God be calling you to do, say, or be in this strategy? Maybe it's resonating in you because you realize something that you've been given. And maybe it's calling you to cherish that more. Or maybe it's calling you, or God is calling you through this strategy to think about employing it in your own life in some way. So, third time round, say what is causing this strategy to resonate within you? What might God be calling you to do, say, or be because of this strategy? When we get to this stage, you may feel like you want to start speaking to one another right as someone has started talking. Please try to hold your comments until all of you in your group have shared, and then you can kind of open it up for a general discussion, you might say. Isn't it interesting that we all said this? Or so you can then, share generally after all six of you have had a chance to answer this third question. And then when I've sensed that all the groups are done, then I'll call us back together for a final prayer. Okay? So groups of six, if you form up, circle your chairs. You can mix and match if you don't want to be with someone you're sitting next to.
So what's your name?
And how about
you? We're going to share it. We'll start with you.
Grew up in Jackson, Mississippi, or outside of Jackson.
Yeah.
Just finished going to school at Western Illinois University, and just came to Boulder.
My name's Dave.
We missed our battery. You said we
could enter.
My name's
Michelle.
But you can,
in between.
I'm Bethany.
I put up
where we used to live.
It's very briefly us there. So she's
I'm Sienna, and I'm from Kansas.
I was from before I came out here. We still live in the great one. We came up here for the summer, and then
you can start by introducing
yourself. My name is Sigmund. I'm Shirley Sasser. Thanks.
Oh. How about start using the mutual recognition right away?
Ooh, I can introduce your name.
I'm so curious.
And then ask you.
I'm wrong. You have to follow the strategy.
I'm
wrong.
Okay.
Okay.
I actually also am from.
But,
I'm Hank Sasser.
I would take it, for me, I would take a twist at yeah. 7. I'm not rescuing you.
Ask her what her name is.
I'm a school teacher.
Trina, Torvalds.
I'm
Bob
Williams.
I'm
a
teacher.
I'm
a
teacher.
Where are you from, Trina?
What I'm mostly called around is not just teaching them, but
how
work as active women. Helping them.
What was your name?
Whatever.
What was it?
Bob and Lillian.
My name is Carla.
I just kind of landed in this job.
I would agree with the withdrawal
sponsor.
To me, that resonates. I feel like that's what I'm doing now. This has actually helped some of that.
So,
how do we do
that? I think that it's so hard to have
to go for a weekend.
Network racism in the United States.
We have to be very young to have a background that they have a broken box.
Because, yeah,
and so
you're
talking
about
the company has to be consistent to understand and have a true
vision.
I feel like I feel more aspirational because you're going to watch the animation.
I feel like it's understood right now. And why it's dead is.
I think that number one, for the same reason, I think that especially
what resonates with
you
could be,
you know, in America, I think, you know, in my situation, I have been very blessed with my good family, all these resources, good education, all that stuff. I think that's a lot of people, even this time,
have
been given that access. So I think, you know, because I am, I should make sure that I use it for a good purpose. Okay. And I think number two is intellectual analysis.
That's a good question.
I think that's really important. We can go out like
that. Being 23 years old, number two,
really important to me that
I believe that I have a lot more studying to do, learning to do, in order to attack the problems that face me in life, as well as dealing with the governmental issues that it gives number eight.
I mean, just for the much, I mean, just thinking about that.
Yeah. So, but a lot of times I am frustrated with my lack of knowledge that I feel like I have a lot of passion for feeling. I know a lot, but there's so much more that I could understand.
I would have to
so
do what
I guess, yeah, intellectual analysis and
the last century discovering more
complex
on myself to be more capable, but to do so
decision to do something like that.
And
yeah, so
just
objective
for that reason, you know, the
would wonder where I
from other people from our country and other people around me, just being able to discuss and convince them,
this whole tour,
you know, otherwise. Or,
I don't know if anybody.
But on the other hand,
I felt the same thing. What would I do? So I had been pondering that the last time. What would you do in the situation? How could you get to that if you hadn't maybe gone through all of that? So we can use as a whole.
Not only the patriotic,
some kind of stuff. I can pull one thing, but that's just
interesting.
Pushing
that,
forward, you know, you're saying
like
that you know you're
during
the
last
that
years.
Way is, you're saying. I don't know if you came in.
I think we were at the number eight, the obedience to Jesus,
where he was,
so,
and then we're announcing that.
I feel sort of by default set to that one.
Boom, that's for the past
That has a lot to do with my beliefs. We have a Bible story. It's been very important to me. Check it out.
What strategies resonate with you? So you were very talented.
For example, one of the books you also wrote,
you would be
responsible for the Episcopal Church. It was instrumental for me. Getting women around
That's where you want to be.
Other people.
out of summer.
I don't know.
That's just straight to the low end. No, I should tell her.
Well, it's crazy. As you say, use some gifts and privilege. I have a hard time about my gifts.
They're afraid of
it. But I think I should do certain stuff in my life.
I tell him, like, why have you some music? I'm saying I try my best to
use that gift to, you know, spread goodwill, you know, and spread love. I try to do as much as I can so I can do it more. But I don't center in theologian all church
study
and I spread the well along. Part of not the secular ways, you know. But I think that is important to remember.
It's kind of hard to.
Because I think a lot of people that are spreading evil are quoting scriptures. That's mostly the problem.
I think that's one way to combat this.
Has everyone shared around them to
share the homosexuality?
Whatever.
Very important. If you would.
It's actually, to me, really different. It's just you pacify the four, just kind of what that guy is. I kind of
my person is not feeling heterosexual.
He's going to ask me.
The same way that having three daughters.
My new one, I mean, there's one of them. Chris.
Now in the church, but in society.
I think that maybe,
strengthening
friendship.
I have a problem with the public church.
Well,
university.
Could you envision that
I wouldn't be using this last one, our own church, to push forward the public.
You're not a church leader.
Right.
I think also that it's, in Jackson, Mississippi, you don't necessarily want to be a city.
I don't know if it's true, but I'm not sure.
In a lot of cases, because the church is so off base.
Everything.
The leadership of the church is so off base that you don't want to be associated with that church, in order to spread your message. Because you can't. I mean, I guess you can't, but you'd have to fight the church in order to spread your message. So, I mean, it's different in different parts of the country, but I know that. Well, not Lutheran, not Lutheran
church.
Just the church of
resonating with you. That's
the voice of the church.
Causing you to have a lot of questions.
Much of
there's a clue and a face that you think you can put it in the Bible.
So it's harder, but so maybe that's why she's reluctant to say public church leadership.
That's why it lives on those ideas.
But yeah, I think, yeah, just the,
it just manifests.
The social gospel is probably more where you should come from. Like, you know, you kind of have to increase that. Associating yourself.
Not having
a
reason maybe the whole that Bill should have been like Chris, what was he saying about Robson and Crunchy?
At Bonhoeffer went on retreat.
It's really, it's
he went to his friend's estate in order to reflect on what was happening or just enjoy another part of life. He also retreated to different places, like for 3 years, and he was a pastor.
That's what you did as intellectual analysis.
And that was kind of a retreat to regroup or any of his
untreatment
of
what was happening.
He also
went
to
the
part of the United States, and that was a
resonate.
Yeah.
The way it kind of resonates
is about Black liberation beyond.
And
you have three. So that also enhances you get a different perspective on what's happening. So that would draw
a worry that
strategy.
Whenever you can,
it's
like,
Lisa Day, that would be
really withdrawing.
Whenever you can, it's like, the whole kind of community building, like we've been making people share their
beliefs. So make conversation.
Alignment with your press to our
connection. I like that. And I
can't
imagine. Or not like it's even about the relationship. Because we do like people difficult relationships. It's people share more.
Well, since I've just heard of your group, you can ask
such a high so much to share. I'm so long to did myself before. Eats up in my car. As a teacher, or ET in my office by myself. So times for me to sit down and do my paperwork and write papers.
I think usually it's the family
in the last year, kind of forced myself to teach around, and it's really actually been.
That
I've actually had written
when
a positive thing where I talked about
Lisa's paper that was done was more shocking and it still is for the last few months.
I'm really, I'll kind of like kind of
the caring for my family.
You can't really just use
that seems so personal and very kind of small, but that it's a way to resist this massive of people in the world. That's been a question to me, a challenge and a call and a blessing. In a way, it's also it's freed me in a certain way. Because sometimes I would feel like, oh, other people are doing all this stuff. And here, you know, I can't do that because I have to take care of my kids. Or, you know, so I was like feeling guilty because I wasn't out on their kids or something because I was home. And so it's freed me to see that, oh, I'm caring for my kids, I love my wife.
Like you had to
talking
on
the phone with my friends, building those bonds, the friendship and family relationships is very significant, so I'm free to do that. It's also changed how I
experience everything and try
those relationships in a different way.
It's been good for us.
That by
being more to
relationship,
kind of
interesting.
Yeah,
since I've
been
kids,
you know,
things like this.
When I'm caring for my kids, I've got a 10-year-old daughter and a 5-year-old son. Meditation. That I'm resisting. I'm also resisting evil over the long haul. that I'm fighting to be giving them a legacy that's going to live beyond. And so that's another way that I think about it.
In different people who have been marginalized by our
society,
learning to appreciate their situation, like trying to understand.
Well, actually, what Lisa said, I said this in the introduction. She is trying to think about the large kinds of rustic. I might be, if there's an evil that's inside me that might be operating in my personal relationships, it also needs to be resisted. Maybe some of these strategies would help me. Massive institutionalized expressions. The ones that make us feel so
small. And you're strengthened by those relationships, and that's what you were saying.
Yeah.
Well, 2 months ago,
it's eye-opening for you.
Yeah, counterintuitive.
But in a way, not really helping me since you're not stable. It was interesting because I
had to do some sounds and I realized I had talked
about that as well.
Which one did you say?
I said 8, but simply because I just returned from a trip that I went to in the last month. Just wondering, do you have to have a lot of that to get to
eight? His later life was kind of
So there were a few instances where he specifically did that, and also focused some of his work intellectually and wisdom-wise on trying to stop the concentration camps. And the other forms of oppression that led to the concentration that he was particularly investing time and energy into Jews is a strategy that embodies for him how that institutional oppression is coming out of the story and in text.
Or not just clean up your act.
You don't think about saying this. Well, this is amazing. It's happening in the world today. Connection to one of the terrorists. And it sort of connects you to how we are
reacting. To many others.
And
as
a
leader.
I read
it as
a government. My experience is that it was stigmatized terrorists. It's a different kind of
law. There's ways of interrogation. They...
It's a learning process. How do you love? How do so hurt?
Persecution. All of that stuff. You know, how are we reacting?
Like understanding
how can we react?
Right.
You know,
we're
talking about
and
how does
it affect the country? It's hard to understand.
It's hard to understand.
You can't wait to ask. You have to see it without the story.
I think a lot of times
when
those kind of mental problems, it's kind of that they're trying to understand as well what's going through. You know, they don't know.
I just want to make a
just
freezing.
I have you go out,
so I chose to take
that scissors out. So I
like that.
And mail it all these.
And who's our personal responsibility?
I can go through security.
Or you know, something,
can't do it.
Well, you know, something like a simple.
So then I just take
those ones.
Oh,
we cannot change the lifestyle.
Just about the terrorists become
no.
Mental disorders of various kinds, living with assistance, care for them, and the community together, they pray together, eat together, do their daily activities together. It's a kind of new analysis. Create this alternative world where something's possible.
Okay. Come back together. We're going to. I close with prayer, but before we do so, I want to thank you for participating tonight, for sharing with one another some of the things that are resonating in your hearts. And I have 9 copies of Lisa's paper, and so you can share those. But again, I'll point you to the paper "Resistance: Bonhoeffer and Resistance to Evil" by Lisa Dayhill at the ELCA website. If you want to just download it when you get home. Just go to this website and then look for Resistance, Bonhoeffer and Resistance to Evil. But I do have the 9 copies here with me. I invite you to join hands. How about if we stand up and get back in the larger circle? Let us pray. Dear God, we give you thanks for Dietrich Bonhoeffer and for his witness and life. We ask that you would bless us with his memory and with his life so that we may see more clearly the ways that we can resist evil in its institutionalized forms. We ask that you would open our hearts and our eyes to hear and see your call for our lives. We also give you thanks for the gifts that you have given us, for all of the ways that you bless us, and for the peace and friendship that you do give us and instill in us. We ask that we would be able to share these gifts in service toward the least of these, our brothers and sisters, wherever they may be. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Amen.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
Thank you.